Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.
Good morning and welcome to the BizNews Daybreak. Today is Friday, the 14th of August. I'm Kerry Lanigan. We've got a packed show for you today with highlights from BNC9. First up, Bloomberg News Now with the latest overnight world news.
Traders on Wall Street drove the S&P 500 to an all-time high in the Thursday session. This move followed more evidence of moderating inflation. Producer prices decelerated in July by more than estimated as energy and food cost fell. Month on month, PPI was flat, and on an annual basis, PPI rose at a rate of 4.7%. That's down from 5.5% in June. Needless to say, this reading reinforced bets on the Fed refraining from raising interest rates next month. Allison McCartney is managing director at UBS Private Wealth Management.
We have an absolutely secular bull market, which the average bull market over the since World War II has lasted 7 years. I think this one can probably 4 years in last a lot longer, given what we have in AI, reshoring, tariffs, etc.
Allison McCartney of UBS speaking earlier to Bloomberg. Now, money markets are pricing in a less than 40% chance of a Fed rate hike in September. Sources tell Bloomberg that OpenAI is on track to generate more than $40 billion in annualized revenue. Now, that would roughly double its run rate from the end of last year. The growth is being driven by AI coding tools, as well as subscriptions, and a small but growing advertising business. Here is Bloomberg News AI reporter Rachel Metz.
What's interesting here is it's not just across a piece of its business. It's not just in its enterprise business. We are seeing growth. What we understand from talking to our sources is it's not just coming from enterprise and its coding product Codex, but it's also coming from ads-related business and also its consumer business.
That is Bloomberg's Rachel Metz. Now, OpenAI's positive momentum strengthens its case for a future initial public offering as competition with rival Anthropic intensifies. Both firms, by the way, have filed confidentially to go public, with Anthropic expected to IPO as soon as this fall. OpenAI declined a request for comment. To earnings news next. After the bell, a lukewarm reception from investors following the latest earnings report from Applied Materials. More from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
The company is the biggest American maker of chip equipment, making it central to a surge in demand for semiconductors. But after a rally that more than doubled the stock price, it's now harder for Applied Materials to meet expectations. Applied Materials is a barometer for chip industry health because semiconductor makers buy its gear when they need to ramp up production.
Efficient Group Chief Economist Davi Ruat took to the BNC9 stage with fresh Reserve Bank numbers showing state spending and taxation both at historic highs, and delivered his sharpest verdict yet on who was to blame. The full video is on biznews.com.
The most important thing for the state is to look after, to provide law and order, to make sure we live in a safe environment. But I'm still the most important person out there. And the reason why we have a state and the reason why we have an authority is to look after me and my stuff and to create an environment that makes it easy for me to trade and to do business and to create wealth. Politicians look at it differently, of course. They think they are important. They think they have to keep on taxing us. And they think they need to spend money on all sort of things. And we are only there to provide them with our taxes so they can spend it on all these grand ideas that politicians have. Now, I did say I'm going to come back to some new numbers. Yesterday, the quarterly bulletin of the Reserve Bank, I read through the quarterly bulletin of the South African Reserve Bank, some numbers there. And there's an authority in South Africa called the National Authority. That's the National Accounts. That is what the Minister of Finance is responsible for. So, and there are all sort of data and statistics published by the South African Reserve Bank on what's going on in the national accounts of the Minister of Finance. Now, this hasn't even been mentioned in the press yet. So this is really, as they say, fresh off the press. The state expenditure, I'm only talking about national accounts. I'm not talking about the provinces. I'm not talking about the state-owned enterprises. I'm not talking about the local authorities. Only what the Minister of Finance is doing. State expenditure in the first quarter of this year as a percentage of GDP currently stands at 35%, the highest in history. State revenue just gone up to 30% of GDP, the highest in history. And it more than doubled the past 30 years or so. Now, if you analyze the fiscal accounts, and that's what I do all the time, but I've just described on how things change over time, you can see exactly that happening in the fiscal accounts of the Minister of Finance. And I quite often wonder, why is South Africa where it is? Because if you look, again, if you stand back a little bit and look how we evolved over history, clearly we've been doing an excellent job. But it hasn't been a straight line. It's not always up. In the case of South Africa, it's been down recently, especially the past 15 years. And today we are poorer than what we were 15 years ago on a per capita basis. So the South African economy is not doing well. In fact, it's absolutely doing horrible, unlike what's been happening the past, say, 20 years or so. So something is wrong. And what is that thing? And I think that thing has got a name, and that thing is called the ANC. And it's called, and it's wrong because the ideological base is established, the ideological roots is somewhere 100 years ago in socialism or communism. So they call themselves even silly names like comrades, for example. It's simply, completely out of sync with the modern economy to be a socialist today, because the state can't afford, the state can't be everything. And that's exactly what Karl Marx told us, is that everything should belong to everybody. And if everything belongs to everybody, nothing belongs to anybody. And so that's our ideological roots. The ANC's policies are wrong as well.
Ian Cameron, Chair of Parliament's Police Portfolio Committee, laid out exactly where SAPS was broken. 722 generals and brigadiers, a 300,000-case DNA backlog, and half the country's police stations not answering their own phones. Check out biznews.com for more.
Now, you can imagine in a country with a crisis like we do with sexual offences and violence against women and children, what a risk and threat this further poses to people. The story I always share, and I've actually shared it on a BizNews platform, was the story of Chantal Makwena in Rocklands in the Eastern Cape, 4-year-old little girl, raped, mutilated, dumped in a pit toilet. And the perpetrator continued to do what he did because the DNA processing took almost 2 years for him to eventually be arrested and then prosecuted accordingly. Now, this is all happening while SAPS has a total of 722 brigadiers and generals. 578 brigadiers, to be exact. We've got 123 major generals. We've got 20 lieutenant generals. And obviously the National Commissioner, which is the only so-called full general. The organization has a budget of about 127 billion rand per year, with more than 102 billion going on compensation. And I'm obviously not saying, I mean, Chatu Rory, for example, I'm not saying we don't need generals and officers and people need to be paid. We get that. The question that we're asking is, are the right people in the right ranks? And are we getting return on investment? And at the moment, I think we all know what the answer is. Now, the problem becomes, and the challenge that I'm facing, is that accountability seems to become some kind of a conspiracy. If you touch certain things or start asking certain questions, the smear campaigns start. But luckily, and I've said this to Alec before, when certain people attack you, you know you're on the right track. So when someone of a certain nature criticizes you, then you should actually see it as encouragement to keep going. Now, over the past 2 years, I've raised questions regarding General Khan. You would have heard of him in the Matlanga Commission, Lieutenant General Mboto, General Teo, General Fani. He was suspended again this week for the second time in a month. General Moodley, and several other senior officers. And almost every time, I either get legal threats, I get an ethics complaint or two or three, maybe four against me at Parliament, and then a nice prominent smear campaign of some sort also starts. And I guess it comes with the territory, even though it doesn't feel that great during those times.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it comes.
Bonitas Medical Aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
Iranian-born South African economist Dr. Iraj Abedian gave BNC9 a sweeping reading of the Iran conflict and made the bold call that historians might look back on this moment as the beginning of America's retreat from the Middle East. The full video is on biznews.com.
Still, according to the CIA reports, which I think is as good as it can get in terms of matching it with what I get from internal sources, still 70% of the Iranian missiles are untouched. And still, the Iranian system, not the Iranian people, who are suffering tremendously. The system had prepared itself for 30 years for this confrontation. It had created not an octopus, but a network of resistance, as they call it. And you can see it literally on a daily basis, so much so that the American bases are now rolling back from the Middle East. The whole security of the region, remember that this is 40-odd% of the oil reserves globally. And in terms of daily flows, it's about 30%. But in terms of world economy, it's absolutely the choke point. Many mistakes have been made. I'm not a military analyst, but from basic common sense and from based on what I had been following for years from both sides, which was not secret stuff. But everybody ignored the obvious stuff, and they went into this fairly imaginary world of receiving a surrender letter from the regime. But be as it may, that's the second circle of event that we're looking at. They have pushed each other to the brink. The personality of Trump and his divided cabinet does not accept defeat. But this is the moment in my personal understanding of the evolution of the historic political economy of the past century, that this is the moment that historians will define as the first sign of the collapse of the American empire, much like what happened to the British empire. It won't be easy, it won't be quick, but it has begun. And the rollback of the American military base presence in the Middle East and the rejigging of the chessboard of security for the Middle East entirely and going all the way to India on the one hand and north of Africa on the other with massive global implications is being drawn up as we speak.
And finally, Bloomberg's Javier Blas explained why the numbers flowing through the Strait of Hormuz were so hard to pin down. And who was taking the risk to get oil out?
Well, it is a lot higher than most people estimates. I think that the consensus probably is somewhere between 4 and 5 million barrels a day based on the available data that we have. And I think that it's very important to say that the emphasis is in available data. There is not a lot of data. A lot of the tankers are crossing the Strait of Hormuz in what we call dark. They have turned off their automatic transponders, which is a gadget that provides us where their position on the water, their longitude, latitude, speed, and heading. We can use some satellite images to figure out where those oil tankers are. But the problem is, before the war, we have access to multiple companies providing multiple satellite services over the Strait of Hormuz. Under pressure from the U.S. government, a lot of those companies have stopped providing those pictures because Washington fears that Iran was using those pictures as a source of intelligence for their attacks, for their targeting. So we are left effectively with a couple of satellites run by the European Union, which provides a single picture every 3 to 5 days. So, and it's not enough to have a good coverage of the region. So a lot of it, a lot of what is happening is going dark, and simply probably we are missing some of it. So can I believe that when the Secretary of Energy of the United States, Chris Wright, says that as much as 9 million barrels a day are crossing? I think it's possible. I think it will be foolish for us to say, no, he's lying. I don't believe it. Just because the available data that we have doesn't really support what he's saying. And I think that the market is beginning to have a sense that probably more than what we think is leaving the Strait of Hormuz.
Who are these guys? Like, who are the captains? Who are the companies? Who are the insurance companies that are saying, all right, give it a shot, guys, see if you can make it through? How is that happening?
Well, a lot of it is being organized by the state-owned company, state oil company of the United Arab Emirates called ADNOC. It's a giant, not nearly as known as, say, Saudi Aramco, but a big oil company run by the Emirates, using their own tankers, using tankers that they are hiring from the market, particularly Greek ship owners, South Korean ship owner, who has become a big owner of super tankers. And as it comes from the crew, all what I can say is that very brave people, because they are putting their lives at risk, very well paid. Some of the companies, for what we are hearing, are offering big bonuses for anyone willing to take the risk. But we have seen some sailors dying on attacks by Iran on oil tankers. So it is really the weight of fear that French movie we have a sequel recently updated. Very brave people making the runs, and obviously some people making themselves very, very rich. Iraq is offering a discount of $30 a barrel for anyone who wants to load or is willing to load his crude inside the Persian Gulf and getting it out. On a full tanker of 2 million barrels of oil, that's $60 million that you could make in 10 days.
That's it for this morning's BizNews Daybreak. I'm Kerry Lanigan. Thanks for listening.
Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.